My friends, make no mistake. The greatest threat we face now is not the virus itself. Rather, it's the lack of leadership and solidarity at the global and national levels.
That was World Health Organization Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus delivering a warning to international leaders on July 9th. As we just heard, the United States is struggling to contain COVID-19. At the end of June, the U.S. had 25% of the world's coronavirus cases, despite accounting for just 4% of the global population. And that's according to data released by Johns Hopkins University. Recently, a number of countries that were thought to have their outbreaks under control have seen upticks in cases, though the rates of cases in those countries pale in comparison to the United States.
Japan, for example, they have a much larger caseload than they did a couple months ago. And as a consequence, they're going back towards lockdown.
That's Ian Bremmer, president of the geopolitical risk firm Eurasia Group.
In Australia, you have one state right now that is going to put a high state of emergency on. And it shows that, you know, even a little bit of people getting back to normal can lead to an awful lot of transmission of this coronavirus.
Ian told me that something setting our country apart from other nations are the political divisions that have emerged here around public safety measures like mask wearing and social distancing.
The fact that this has been politicized in the United States, that up until very recently, the president himself was unwilling to proactively support and demonstrate mask wearing, even as his Surgeon General was doing everything he could to promote science, is truly unfortunate. It's obviously not displaying leadership internationally, and it fails the American citizens. The fact that you still have, I mean, I just saw Peter Navarro, White House senior advisor, knows nothing about medicine, but nonetheless saying that hydroxychloroquine is something he believes that we should continue to support, like the Brazilian president has, for example. Huge mistake. The medical community, to a person, disagrees with that take. But the United States was actually stockpiling it because the president said he thought it was good and decided to take it himself. As ostensibly a preventative measure. So, I mean, look, when we look at the countries that have done a good job, it's not wealthy or poor countries. It's not big or small countries. It's not democratic or authoritarian countries. It's actually a bunch of governments that decided early that they were going to let the people with expertise actually lead the response, and they didn't politicize it. Vietnam would be an authoritarian state that did that well. South Korea, certainly Germany, large, democratic, Norway, New Zealand, Greece, Argentina, quite poor, but also have been effective. I mean, there are actually, I could point to about 20 countries, Uruguay, about 20 countries around the world that have actually done an extremely good job. And they've had all of the things I just mentioned in common. They didn't politicize, they didn't cheerlead, and they got on it early, letting the people with expertise, letting the scientists, letting the doctors actually lead the response, because it's a pandemic. And it's a pandemic that we have no experience with before. So clearly, you're going to want people that have the best understanding of a massive healthcare crisis and how to respond to it and how to learn quickly and change your policy on the basis of that. You want those to be the people making decisions. And in the United States, certainly at the state level and the city level, it was very mixed, some good, some bad, some changing over time, right? But at the federal level, massive mistakes on that front being made by the administration.
Last month, President Trump notified the World Health Organization that the United States would be withdrawing from the group and pulling funding from the group, and this is supposed to go into effect this coming year. How would you say that decision has been received by international community leaders?
Probably, I mean, almost uniquely badly. I mean, it's very hard to unify. It's a very divided world. It's very hard to unify every leader in the world against the decision that you make. I think President Trump managed that by announcing that he was leaving the WHO in the middle of a pandemic. Maybe the only other decision he made along those lines would have been the decision to leave the Paris Climate Accord, where every other government in the world opposed what the United States was doing. It's really hard to do that, but Trump has a knack for finding policies that are maximally antagonistic of other countries. And, you know, the America first idea that he has means that other countries can kind of go scratch. And he does bring that to bear, even though, as you mentioned, the decision to leave the World Health Organization is something that the U.S. can't actually effectuate until a year after the announcement. So as of right now, literally today, the engagement that the U.S. continues to have with the WHO, sharing of data, working with them at the rest, continues unabated. It hasn't actually changed. Same is true of the Paris Climate Accord, by the way. In both cases, the U.S. only can leave after the elections in November. So what people do at the ballot box in the coming months will actually matter to both of these outcomes.
Ian, in addition to the Trump administration's antagonism and relationship or lack thereof with the WHO, we're also seeing on an international level a number of countries, including the entire European Union, China, Japan, and New Zealand, have banned American travelers. What does that say? I mean, I feel like there's evidence mounting here, Ian, that the United States is not seen as a global partner in the coronavirus response. And dare I say, we have become somewhat of a, I don't want to say laughing stock, but have we?
I mean, I wouldn't go that far, right? I mean, it is certainly true that, remember, we stopped the Chinese from coming into the U.S. Other countries did too very early. Australia, for example, though Japan and South Korea did not. We were the ones that told the Europeans they were not allowed to come here when that was the epicenter. And we didn't even tell the Europeans. They found out on cable news and they condemned us the next day, but we cut them off. Their passports were less useful at this point. Now you've got far more case transmission and deaths per capita in the United States on a weekly basis than you do in Europe, than certainly you do in China and Japan. So these countries are, you know, it's a reciprocal decision, right? And no one should blame them for doing that. I do think that the way the U.S. has mishandled and politicized this crisis has deeply undermined the trust that many other countries have for the U.S. and has for our government. But I would also point out that at the same time, the tech companies that are absolutely critical for getting us through and out of this pandemic, the geo-tracing that we're going to need, the virtual commerce that we need, those companies are overwhelmingly in the West American. And so the U.S. is also, the private sector is leading the way out of this economic crisis, even as the U.S. government is doing such a poor job in responding to the pandemic itself. The dollar, the U.S. dollar, is still the reserve currency of the world. We still export an enormous amount of food and energy to a lot of the countries that don't want our people right now. And that's going to continue.
Ian, there's an Associated Press poll from May that found that 50%, 50, or half of U.S. adults that were surveyed said they were unsure about getting vaccinated when one is available. So off of your point that the U.S. is providing a lot of the e-commerce, the dollar is still strong, and a lot of the services to get through this, we're also in the vaccine race. And at the same time, as our infection rates are as high as they are, and we stand to play a role in creating a vaccine, half of Americans surveyed by the Associated Press say that they don't want to get a vaccine.
It's true that there are anti-vaxxers in the U.S. and that social media has led to a lot, even further polarization of extreme views and fake news. And that's very damaging. For the ability to lead with science, which includes being able to use and take a vaccine. By the way, the anti-vaxxer movement is actually stronger per capita in France than is in the United States. This is not just an American problem. But let's also keep in mind that the early vaccines that are, you know, now moving into phase three trials in human beings like Moderna and others, there are clearly a lot of side effects, most of which aren't serious, but some of which could be serious for older people, particularly with pre-existing conditions. It looks like they don't exist. It's not just one shot, but you probably need a booster shot. And for some older people, you might need more than one. And we also see that it's, you know, that this isn't a silver bullet. It's likely to work like a regular flu shot, which means it's going to reduce hospitalizations, it'll reduce mortality, but it won't stop you from getting the disease. At the same time, there's news out right now that the Russians are planning a Sputnik moment with their vaccine before it's actually gone through phase three trials, which clearly would be not safe in any way for the Russian public. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if a significant piece of the numbers that you're seeing saying they're not going to take a vaccine is because at this point, we don't yet know when a vaccine is quote unquote ready. Or is the FDA going to, you know, completely approve taking that vaccine? Do we trust that people that we're hearing from in the media, including some articles I've seen recently, one big one in Forbes magazine with someone who does seem to have a solid medical background, saying that the initial vaccines, even if they haven't been tested properly, we should allow people to take them if they volunteer. No, you shouldn't. But, you know, so I think in the environment where there's so much uncertainty and we don't know what the vaccine is yet, I would take those numbers with a grain of salt. They're probably a lot greater than the anti-vax movement would have you believe.
And finally, given everything that we've just laid out, do you think the Trump administration's response to the coronavirus pandemic could shape how the international community views the United States long term, at least from a policy standpoint, if not just the way they think of our country?
They're certainly less happy with the United States and less happy with Trump. But I think it's interesting that as the United States, as Trump goes after China and Huawei and 5G and TikTok, turns out that most of our allies around the world are absolutely with us. And in part, that's because they have similar interests. And in part, it's because the United States is much more powerful than those countries and they don't want to get hurt. When the U.S. left the Iranian nuclear deal, all the other countries that were involved opposed it, but they still went along with their sanctions. Why? Because the U.S. is a lot more important than Iran. When we had Mexico and Canada and we were moving, said we're getting rid of NAFTA unless you do this new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, they got on board. Even when we told the Mexicans you had to increase your border security on your southern border or we're going to tariff you, they did it. And it's funny, Trump said that we're going to build a wall, Mexico's going to pay for it. It turned out he was right. It just wasn't the American wall. It was the wall on the south of the Mexico border with Central America. Look, I'm not trying to say this because I think Trump is brilliant or doing a fantastic job. I just think it's important to recognize that when you're the most powerful country in the world, and that isn't going away, and when you're so much more powerful than your allies, you still have an awful lot of influence over what they're going to do. And so, no, I don't think suddenly the United States isn't listened to by anyone just because we do things that they don't want. I do think that there are more effective ways of governing and getting the outcomes we'd like for the long term than what we've been doing in many cases in the last few years.
Ian Bremmer is the president of Eurasia Group. Ian, thanks so much.
Yeah, my pleasure.